Hello and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. My name is Mark Peacock. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 18, recorded Friday, October 14th, 2005. I'm going to break the format a bit today with an odds and ends podcast, cleaning out the bullet points in my notebook that just can't seem to grow up into standalone topics. Some of those we're going to talk about today: trouble with chainsaws, the fourth quarter dash for status, and an update on our best airline poll. This week, recording again from the suburban Chicago studio, triangulated through Phoenix and Denver at the beginning of this week. You know, this is the right time of the year to go to Phoenix. It's sort of 80s in the day, high 60s, low 70s at night. I'll tell you, beats being there in August when it's sort of 110, 120 degrees during the day. You know, and it's funny, whenever I mention this to people, I give those give those temperatures, there's always somebody who sort of pops off with, "But it's a dry heat." My response is, "Yeah, but so's an oven." It was a bit of a shock then when I looked out the window of my TED flight Tuesday morning, sort of on the approach into Denver. Everything was white. They had gotten 6 inches of snow the day before, and I had nothing on but a sports coat. Okay, I had shirt, shoes, pants also, but nothing that was going to stand up to the first snow of the season. You know, and that's the tough part about doing the travel triangulation during the fall. The variability, the inconsistency of the weather. You know, you can look at the Weather Channel all you want, but it still doesn't help you pack for 80s one day and 30s the next. I did get a chance to meet up with my parents, who live in Evergreen, just up the hill from Denver. I met them in the city, the 16th Street Mall area. I took them out to lunch. They gave me a boxed-up chainsaw. Now, this isn't quite as sort of non sequitur as it might sound. We're building a new house here outside of Chicago, and had to take out a couple of trees. And one of them, a big maple, is sitting in the backyard waiting to be cut up for firewood. You know, at 70, my dad's not cutting up too many things anymore, other than maybe coupons. So we went to some sort of mailbox limited type place and had the saw all boxed up so I could check it onto my flight and take it home with me to Chicago. So I'm on the plane. 5 minutes before departure time, I get paged. You know, the sort of, you know, "Will Mark Peacock please ring your overhead flight button?" So I hit the call button and I wait, and then I get paged again. And I hit the call button again. And I get paged again. And I hit the call button. And finally, you know, I'm sitting back in seat 39B, sort of the back of the bus on a United 777. You know, finally, I just get up. You know, obviously, between all the boarding and everything, either people aren't hearing the little ding or they're not seeing the light. And I want to see, what do they want? You know, could I be getting a surprise first class upgrade? Nope. Bad news instead. I'm making my way back up, sort of like a fish, you know, like a salmon swimming upstream against the people, coming down the aisle who are still boarding. Operations supervisor tells me that the TSA refused to accept the chainsaw that I checked. Once used, they said, a chainsaw can't be flown because it might contain gasoline. He told me they'd pulled it off and it's sitting in baggage service. You know, there wasn't a hell of a lot I could do. I mean, it was 5 minutes before departure time. They're about ready to close the door. So I just sat back down, plugged my iPod back in my ears, and decided to worry about it later. The next day, I called just about every United number that I could find, including the one from the operations supervisor, just trying to find a live body in Denver baggage service. Even when I called the corporate United number and they called Denver, they couldn't get anybody to answer. I just finally sent my dad over to DIA and he tracked it down. He just found somebody and said, "Hey, this is what I'm looking for." And that seemed to be the easiest way to get it done. You know, though, having gone through all this, I was curious about the TSA's checked luggage restrictions. So I headed over to their website. The list of permitted and prohibited items, I'll tell you, wasn't immediately accessible from the homepage. It took about 4 clicks down, which, you know, from the web designers I know, that's definitely considered deep diving. And I found a 5-page matrix of yeses and noes. I'll put the URL in the show notes so you won't have, if you're interested, you won't have as far down to go. Won't have to go sort of spelunking through their website. But, you know, no mention of chainsaws. But saws, sort of the generic, are on page 4 under the tools section with a no, not permitted in the carry-on column, and a yes in the permitted in checked luggage column. And nothing specific about either new or used chainsaws. Now, under flammable items, gasoline is checked no under both columns. I mean, that's pretty reasonable. But there was no gas in the chainsaw. My dad had obviously emptied it before packing. Well, that being said, the saw is now making its way across I-70 to I-80 in a brown UPS truck. It should get here next week. Good excuse for a lazy weekend. Have you ever been all alone? As you ride from town to town, you ever been all alone? As you ride from town to town, slipped in the deep end. Well, there's a little PodSafe travel music on the bridge. They're Soul Traveling by the Australian band Stingray. They describe themselves as progressive blues on the PodSafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. The band's URL is in the show notes. Kind of interesting. I thought I'd give that PodSafe Music Network a try. And just sort of searched on travel. And out this one popped. Kind of liked it. Gary Bembridge posted a pointer to his My Travel Reviews podcast on the Travel Commons website under podcast number 12, which is where we talked about other travel podcasts and sort of complete with a consulting-esque 2x2 matrix. And Gary, unfortunately, I didn't know about Gary's podcast, so it didn't make the 2x2. And so he asked me to give it a listen. And I did. Hey, I liked Gary's podcast about his transatlantic crossing on the Queen Elizabeth II in December 2002. You know, he does a good job of describing the ups and downs of a rather rough crossing. And there are lots of links on his website, including a video that he took, he must have taken it, of the rear deck pool and just watching it slosh from all the waves as they were making this winter crossing. You know, the amazing thing to me was, is that, you know, in the video, there are people still in the pool. And you're thinking, okay, wait, you're going across the Atlantic, it's December, you know, the boat is obviously rocking and rolling, and there are people sitting in the pool. Actually, come to think about it, you know, there you got it. You got your own wave pool, real live wave pool. I don't know, it was kind of interesting. Lots of links, fun video, check it out. As always, thanks to everyone who has sent me notes at comments@travelcommons.com or has left comments on the Travel Commons website, www.travelcommons.com. We do actually have one full-fledged topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, and that is the fourth quarter dash for status. You know, this time every year, all the frequent travelers are looking at their account balances and sort of figuring out how to spread those remaining trips, working all the angles to hit the most status gates possible. Now, I already requalified for American Airlines Platinum. That's sort of their mid-tier status level. You've got Advantage Gold, Advantage Platinum, and Executive Platinum. And I know that I'm not going to make the top-tier Executive Platinum level because of what I end up doing, being in Chicago, a dual hub. Sometimes I'll take American, sometimes United, sometimes Southwest. I'll never be like folks in Dallas where American's their only choice. So if they're a frequent traveler, they're going to hit Executive Platinum. So anyhow, I'm now sort of shifting my travel over to United so I can requalify for their premier executive level, which is their equivalent to American Airlines Platinum, the mid-tier status. You know, I am less than 20,000 miles away from hitting 2 million lifetime miles on American, but I think I'll save that milestone for 2006. You know, the bigger question for me really is around hotel status. Hilton, Starwood, Marriott have all sent me promotions to keep my status. And Hyatt's got a fun, got a neat stay two nights, get one free promotion going on. So yeah, actually, there's some tough decisions there. For me, the main decision is which Platinum card to keep, Marriott or Starwood. You know, the top-end Starwood properties, Westin and the W, are really nicer than anything Marriott offers. But, you know, even together with Sheraton, you know, Starwood just doesn't cover all the markets and locations that Marriott does. Now, you know, this may sound a little pathetic, but actually, you know, the Platinum level does get you a couple of important things. You can book rooms at sold-out hotels, and this is a key perk, especially now that travel is starting to pick up. And at the Gold and the Platinum levels, you get access to their club or concierge lounges for free. Now, this ends up, I mean, this may sound a little pathetic, but But it actually saves time and money for breakfast, because you can go in there. They have a nice continental breakfast going on, which means you don't have to wait for a waiter at the in the mainline restaurant. And it also gives you a place to go outside your room without having to sit in the bar. It gives you a place to get sort of a beer, pick up a couple of bottles of water, watch a little TV, especially when those four walls of that room are starting to close in around you. You feel like you're living in a cave. For my needs, I think that that Marriott's Concierge Lounge is a bit better deal than most of the Starwood Club level lounges that I've used. So I've already qualified for Gold level on Starwood, so I think I'll probably just focus on the Marriott Platinum status. All this effort for different colored plastic cards, but like I said, the perks are worth something to the frequent traveler. We talked about hotels just now, but with airlines, you get shorter security lines and preference when standing by for a plane seat if you're trying to move up on the schedule, get an earlier flight out, or if you're trying to get an upgrade. And like I said, some of these perks save real money. Concierge lounge breakfast, there's $10 right there. And standby preferences end up, can save you sort of $25 or $100 for a rebooking fee. If you're at the head of the line on standby, then you don't really need to get confirmed. And actually, a lot of the times, they actually will, because of your status, they actually will sort of break the rule and confirm you on the earlier flight rather than having you wait on standby. And some of the conveniences are just that. They make life on the road easier. So shorter security lines, getting a room at a sold-out hotel. I know guys who've flown from San Francisco to Chicago to buy me dinner, just using it to justify the last couple of thousand miles that they need to hit United 1K level. There's a limit as to what I'll do, though. I flew down to Phoenix on America West on Monday. It was wasting a high mileage trip, but I'll tell you, I just could not justify the $600 premium that American was asking for their morning flight down. But I don't know, for those free breakfasts, I might be willing to drive past a couple of perfectly good hotels to rack up another night at a Marriott.
Baby, it won't be long till I'll be tied on my flying shoes, my flying shoes.
Hey, have we seen the end of the shoe carnival? For a while it seemed that every other Travel Commons podcast had a TSA rant, with me relating my latest exchange with a TSA screener post. And a lot of those rants had to do with shoes. Here's an example from Travel Commons number 3.
One guy tries to light a shoe on fire four or five years ago, and now millions of people are traipsing through airports in their bare feet.
But by Travel Commons number 11, I was sensing a bit of a change.
And in my discussion, he intimated that there would be some easing of that shoe policy, that it sounded like someone was injecting a little bit of realism into the TSA about the actual damage that a shoe bomb could cause. I mean, he and I both agree it'd be sort of tough to take down an airplane with the amount of explosives that you could pack into a man's dress shoe.
Well, I'll tell you, I haven't taken my shoes off now for a couple of weeks, and indeed this week, passing through two of the most by-the-book TSA locations, Denver and Phoenix, I walked through the screening machines a complete man, shoes and all, going across the tile on leather. And on top of it, no one shouting at the waiting passengers, "Take your shoes off!" It made that 15-minute TSA wait at Denver actually tolerable. And so, while the TSA still has its moments, like hand-searching bedridden nursing home evacuees fleeing Rita, they at least seem to be trying to make the traveler's experience somewhat more tolerable. And here's another thought on today's Travel Commons podcast. It's been trying to get out of my notebook for a while. How do you test for travelability when buying clothes? I've got a pair of black slacks that I really like. Italian wool, lightweight, flat front. And when I tried them on here at Mark Shale in Chicago, I looked in the mirrors, I walked around a little bit, I tested the waistband, felt great, fit great. Took them to my tailor, had the had cuffs put on the legs, and they just felt great. Now I'm on a 4-hour flight to LAX, and these pants they keep riding up. I'll tell you, on that 4-hour flight, I was picking at my seat so much, the girl sitting next to me must have thought I had ringworm. How do you test for that when you're trying on a pair of pants? And then, there's women's low-rise jeans. I'll tell you, I'm really getting tired of getting mooned every time a woman reaches down to get a magazine from her carry-on. You know, an article in Tuesday's USA Today says that women's waistbands are heading higher. And all I can say is thank God. I'll tell you, plumber's crack is an eye-watering thing, whether it's coming from a woman or a man.
Good is good and bad is bad.
Hey, and here's the last odd or end. I'm not quite sure which one it is. An update on our best U.S. Airline poll. You know, we introduced this poll back in Travel Commons number 13 at the beginning of September. What's your favorite U.S. airline? It was following on the poll for the worst U.S. airport, so you know, sort of decided to go positive. Well, we've got 90 votes in, and it's a tight race. American and Midwest Express are tied for first, but they're only one vote ahead of the two airlines tied for second place, United and Continental, which in turn are only two votes ahead of third place Delta. So it's very interesting, sort of the new folks that are making a lot of the press splash, you know, JetBlue, in particular, is running pretty behind, pretty far behind in the pack. And actually, Midwest Express just really sort of burst from kind of going nowhere to now being tied for first. So it's been kind of interesting watching the results. You know, also along with voting, people can leave comments on the. On the poll. Steve Frick from the Frick's World blog, who's been a longtime listener and contributor at Travel Commons, put the first comment in place around why he chooses Delta, and it's really around, frequent, given that he lives in Atlanta, it's really around frequency of flights and status, as you would expect from a frequent traveler. But recently, someone posted a little bit different cut. They said, and here's the story. In August, my family traveled a number of legs on American from London to Puerto Vallarta via Dallas. They said with a side trip to Little Rock. There you go, and back home again. Home, I'm assuming being London, via Chicago. We chose American for the extra leg room and availability of day flights on all the legs. Interesting. After a great vacation in Mexico, they said, we ended up spending a whole day in Puerto Vallarta Airport. Definitely not recommended, as the plane developed a technical fault. After a near mutiny by passengers as a result of really poor communications from the local ground staff, we eventually left 10 hours late and had to spend the night at DFW as we had missed our connection to O'Hare. It was quite a surprise a few weeks later to receive a letter personally signed by a senior manager apologizing for the ordeal we had been put through and granting all four of us 30,000 American Airlines miles. They have regained our loyalty with this gesture. Well, you know, that's actually a great story, and it's a good example of how a simple, honest, personal gesture, you know, a letter, we realize we inconvenienced you, and here's something to make up for your time. That simple, honest, personal gesture, one-to-one gesture, can turn what was a rightfully dissatisfied customer into now an enthusiastic advocate. Somebody who not only is satisfied, but actually has gone out of their way to tell their story. We'll keep the poll open for a few more weeks, so if you haven't yet voted, please check out the left-hand column on the Travel Commons website. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 18. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, especially the longtime subscribers. I don't think I've thanked you guys in a while. Thanks for hanging in. And I hope you decide to stay subscribed. If you get a chance, go to the Travel Commons website and click on the cluster map section. It's below the airline poll, left-hand column on the website. It's kind of neat. I actually found it on the Tartan podcast website. And what it does, it does two things. It counts site hits like a regular counter would, but then it plots the visitors. So when somebody comes in and hits the site, it plots the visitors on a world map based on their IP address. You know, I'm not sure how accurate it is, but it is pretty neat to see the dots, visitors, and geographically where they're at. And if you go and look, you'll see that the Travel Commons podcast, as you might expect, is very heavily U.S. The visitors are primarily from the U.S. good chunk of folks from Western Europe, and then it's kind of neat to see a couple of dots in Japan and Australia and New Zealand. It resets at the top of every month, so it sort of clears out. This is sort of a good time to look at it now as the dots sort of build up. But last month there was even one. It was either in Singapore or Kuala Lumpur, and I don't know. It's just kind of neat to see where people are coming and visiting from. Anyhow, check it out on the left hand side of the website. Again, thanks for all the emails to comments at travelcommons.com. And the postings on podcastalley.com and the postings that you make at the Travel Commons website. I really appreciate all the feedback. Well, take care. Heading down to Memphis next week. Again, kind of another easy travel week. But look forward to talking to you soon. And until then, take care. Bye now.